Hello, everybody. I'm Dwayne Mancini, and welcome to another episode of the Project MedTech Podcast. If you need anything from us or would like to suggest a future guest, you can email us at info@projectmedtech.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. For more information on Project MedTech, our events we host, our consulting and advisory services, and to sign up for our monthly newsletter, visit our website, www.projectmedtech.com, and follow us on LinkedIn. If you're enjoying this content, don't forget to check out our other podcasts by searching MedTech Money on your favorite podcast platform or by heading to our website. MedTech Money is an interview-style podcast focused on demystifying raising and investing capital for MedTech companies. We also have two events coming up this year, our Midwest Showcase in Cleveland, Ohio, August 30th, and our Startup Symposium in Houston, Texas, October 25th through the 26th. There's more information on our website on both of these events, and if you use the code PM20 at checkout, you'll get 20% off. These events are made possible by our sponsors, and one of our sponsors who will be sponsoring both the Midwest Showcase and the Startup Symposium also sponsors this podcast series and enables us to bring you this content weekly. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the law firm of McDonald Hopkins. Building medtech companies the right way based on great technology is not a one-size-fits-all endeavor. McDonald Hopkins provides customized and proactive strategies that align clients' valuable medtech technology with their business goals. This, in turn, builds those clients into successful, thriving companies. With strong experience and depth in the startup, venture capital, and intellectual property and fundraising arenas, McDonald Hopkins can be an important part of your team to help you develop the medtech business that you envision. In this episode, our guest Katrina Rogers at Evergreen Bioscience Innovation and I discuss the ecosystem in the Pacific Northwest of the United States, the new innovation cluster she is leading, her experience and quality, and so much more. So without further ado, my discussion with Katrina Rogers.
Medical innovation starts with medical discussion. Talking about the future and what comes next with Project MedTech.
Okay, Katrina, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dwayne. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Katrina, let's start with an introduction into who you are, your background, and what you're currently doing.
Great. Well, I'm a quality and leadership expert. And I have over 25 years of experience in pharmaceutical and medical device discovery, development, and manufacturing. I get to use that expertise in several ways. I have my own professional services firm where I help innovators, investors, and leaders get their medical products from bench to bedside. I am also an adjunct faculty member at Washington State University in the College of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences. And when I'm wearing that hat, I'm typically working on talent development for the biosciences. And lastly, and maybe not the least piece, is in the last year and a quarter, I've been the CEO of Evergreen Bioscience Innovation. That is a modern innovation cluster forming in the Northwest to build the bioscience ecosystem of the future.
Awesome. So we'll start at the... what could be the quickest answer, but just from a Washington State University perspective, 40% of our listeners are international. So Washington State is located in the Pacific Northwest.
Where in
the state of Washington?
Okay. There are satellite campuses all across the state. The mothership, as we call her, is in Pullman, Washington, which is in the southeast corner. I am co-located in Spokane, Washington, on the east side of the state with the Health Sciences campus. And Washington okay. State University is the land-grant university for the state of Washington.
Oh, very cool. Okay. So, funny thing for any of the people who are football fans or college football fans, even more specifically, Washington State is known for a individual fan who follows college game day around the country and flags the, it's Washington State Cougars.
It is the Cougars. And that is yeah. the, they take the flag from game to game and use that as boosterism. They're well known for it.
they're like, it's known for it at this time. I mean, I can remember they just did a special on this guy, and then he takes it around all around and follows them all around. It's awesome. That's great. So I'm going to circle back to the quality piece, but I'd like to go to what you touched on last. And so the name of the group again is Evergreen.
Evergreen Bioscience Innovation Cluster.
Okay.
That's our formal recognition name. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So you took over as CEO. Did you start it or was there, how long has this been around?
It's only been around for about a year and a half. So we received our initial funding in March of last year. I came on as CEO in April and we've been active ever since. What happened was in June of 2021, the Washington State Department of Commerce team called us up and said, hey, we're thinking about spending some money to build innovation clusters. And my team were like, great, what's an innovation cluster? Which is the question that everyone asks. Yeah. And that really started us on the journey that we're on now. What we've discovered during that summer and fall was that a modern innovation cluster is an industry-led collaboration of members from five economic sectors. And those sectors are the academic, the government, and the corporate industry sector. Those groups typically will form an innovation cluster, the old school kind of innovation cluster. Modern innovation clusters add members from the entrepreneur sector as well as the capital sector, because we know that in order to solve the many problems that our industry faces, we're going to need new ideas and we're going to need resources to make those new ideas real. So that the context there is modern innovation clusters, really that five sector collaboration that is industry led. We have to be really focused around a vertical.
Okay, awesome. And then I think the other thing that I thought was unique when we first talked as well is it's not just Washington, correct?
It is not just Washington. So we received our initial funding from Washington State Department of Commerce because biosciences are an industry sector that's very important to Washington State. Mm-hmm. But what we recognize and what all of our members and our supporters recognize is that we cannot just be bounded. Regionalism is really old hat these days. We can't just be bounded by the state boundaries. Innovation is happening everywhere. And in fact, that it's really important for the growth across the globe is as we start to bring together the assets and the people who are active in the space across a multi-state region in the Northwest, as well as moving across the border into BC and Alberta.
Okay. Awesome. It's very cool. And I noticed too, the other thing was the different groups that are a part of your organization and pulling it together. You know, I just think about if you look across some different states, there's, you know, state groups that are in charge of economic development and, you know, they have very similar missions to probably what yours is, right? And so how have you found working across those organizations? Because a lot of them are part of your group as well, right? And so it's interesting. I mean, for people who don't know, I mean, this is, it is tough to wrangle cats together. and so people who take that initial step to do that, it gets hard, right? And especially as you take more states and, you know, they're focused on one region of a state and now they're partnering with the state group and now they're partnering with the group that's maybe four or five states. And so I'm curious on how that's been going for you in the last year and a half.
It's really one of the most exciting elements of what we do. Some of your listeners likely know that most states have a state bioscience association. That typically is an industry trade association. An innovation cluster differs from an industry trade association, that trade associations are more focused on the industry as it is right now and what, you know, and the health of the industry sort of in the present day. An innovation cluster is looking out forward in the industry to say, what is it that we really need? How do we become the industry of the future? How do we think about what this industry needs in order to expand appropriately, to grow at a good pace, to build out those spaces that maybe, you know, where the problems are being faced, where a trade association sometimes struggles with the problem, that sort of problem statement element.
Mm-hmm.
We also work together with other innovation clusters. And the context here is it's really about collaboration or something that we call co-opetition, because we know that there are challenges that many people face. They tend to be at a meta level. They tend to be across the industry, and no one company can solve that it themselves. There's generally not enough resources within a company to solve a problem. So we say, let's say something like, I've had people propose to me thinking about a solution around CGMP warehousing space, particularly cold chain or either frozen or refrigerated space, because there's a huge gap in the industry right now in capacity for that kind of space. So thinking about a solution on that, we're really kind of in the ideation stage for something like that, but that's an example of a problem that a lot of companies face and no one company can solve. So that's really the context around thinking about what that co-opetition looks like. We think that the problems that our industry or the challenges that we face and our ability to grow is limited only by our, you know, what we can invent. We don't see ourselves as in direct competition with either trade associations or other bioscience innovation clusters, because we think the pie is big enough and only growing bigger for all of us to have a really healthy participation in it.
Yeah. And I, you know, you were going over the five areas, and I didn't write them down fast enough, but the one thing that stuck out was the entrepreneur piece. You know, obviously at Project MedTech, our consulting group is highly focused on helping early stage entrepreneurs get to the point where they need full time executives on their team. Right. I mean, that's a lot of our goal. But, you know, that's when you're in areas where, you know, a lot of when you think of MedTech, a lot of the areas where people talk about as like a med tech hub or a biotech hub. We talk about Boston, we talk about San Francisco and San Diego. Minnesota is certainly a med tech hub as well from a strategic standpoint. If I've learned anything from doing this podcast and then also working at Project MedTech, I've learned that there's a lot of really good stuff going on in a lot of different areas. And so, but generally where some of those groups fall short is the resource aspect of it, right? And attracting people to those specific areas is actually, you would think would be hard. I actually find it easy, right? Like for the Midwest, I'm in the Midwest, right? Mm-hmm. Growing up in the Midwest is fantastic, especially for a family. And right, there's this kind of appeal there. But the resource issue of having talented people who know biotech and medtech sometimes is where I see it fall a little short, right? Or startups generally have issues. So how has that been for you? Is that something you've kind of set out to solve a little bit of making sure, you know, it's finding the resources, right? So that these entrepreneurs raise their hand and say, hey, I have this great idea. And you can go, awesome. Here's all the resources you possibly need in a nice little pamphlet list, whatever it is, and you can go with it. So is that something you kind of set out to help address?
We certainly aim to help our entrepreneurs. And I think you've touched upon a huge amount of issues that we might be able to unpack. But these are things that connect to everything that I do, whether I'm consulting with an entrepreneurial company, whether I'm working in the talent space, trying to not only attract young people into these excellent careers and where you really have a mission, right? You're saving lives, you're helping patients live better lives. It's just so powerful. And then also in the context of the innovation cluster, where we are supporting entrepreneurs, but we're also supporting the wider ecosystem and helping them connect to the contract service providers that are out there and ready for, to help them out. But when we really think about the space that you're talking about, I think that the first challenge here is to get people to see themselves as entrepreneurs. There are great ideas all across the world. And sometimes people think, oh, I have this domain expertise. I know this is a solution to this problem. I see it in my everyday practice, or I see it in my workspace. I can solve this problem with this idea. So getting them beyond that piece to see themselves as the entrepreneur and to take that first step and to recognize that they don't have to know every single thing. They are going to get help from other people. Mm-hmm. And that, in fact, they want to get help from other people because no one knows everything that they need to know right. in this business.
Yeah.
And helping them move forward through that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the initial paralysis of, wow, I have this, I know there's a huge problem. I have this idea, but where do I even start? Or who do I go to? And that oftentimes is enough to kill a lot of good ideas, to your point. Right. And so, yeah, I love that.
And the flip side of thinking that you have to be located in some place like San Francisco or Boston to be successful at this. And that's absolutely not true. We got to pop that bubble right away.
Yeah, right. I agree. And that's, you know, when we talk about different key issues we see startups face, right? It's getting access to a network, right? Or an environment. It is getting access to resources, whether it be resources to help, you know, drive the company forward or to evaluate, hey, is this really a big problem or is this a good solution? The other one is funding. Can you kind of talk a little bit about and popping this bubble, right? Mm-hmm. VCs are not the only people who invest in startup companies, much to a lot of startups beliefs where I talk to startups, they go, I've talked to 300 VCs. I've talked to 400 VCs. And I go, okay, great. What stage are you at? Well, we're pre-seed. We have no investment yet. Okay. But you don't meet their thesis. Right. And so popping that bubble, tell me about the, life science or biosciences, investment scene in the Pacific Northwest.
Right. Well, we're definitely seeing that growing. I think there's an opportunity for more people to participate. And the Northwest is benefiting from some active folks within, for example, the Seattle Angel Conference. They're building out new health angels networks. So there's real activity around establishing angel investing groups with a specific focus on health technologies, pharmaceuticals, devices, digital health. That's a significant investment area for our region. And I will say that everyone faces the same challenge with investing. And the other part of the challenge to investing in medical products is the timeline. This isn't like an app. It isn't like software or some kinds of technology or other kinds of commercial products where you can turn around and expect your returns within 2 or 3 years. The timelines are necessarily longer. And so investors have to be thinking about returns based on the different milestones that a product might go through.
Yeah, educating early stage investors on what it means to be investing in medtech and biotech. I don't think it's hard to get someone to fall in love with the mission behind what everyone in this industry is doing, right? Mm-hmm. Which is saving lives and impacting lives in a positive way. It's getting them to understand it's probably not like the other businesses they've either A, been a part of or B, invested in the past, right? And mm-hmm. getting them to understand those timelines. So I think that's spot on. I think the other thing we try to stress too is post-COVID, the average distance between the investor who led a pre-seed round went from 100 miles to 600 miles on average. So it's 6x'd. I heard this stat at a conference, and something we've always been pushing was don't look at your investor in terms of Oh, I'm in Cleveland, Ohio, so that means I need to look at Greater Cleveland, Ohio for my first investments. Look at it in terms of who invests in my kind of technology and who invests in the life sciences, right? And then go from there. Because I could tell you that from our experience, we actually have a pretty good relationship with a group in Seattle, and they're really receptive to deal flow, right? And so, and we found that with a lot of angel groups all over the country. And so I think that's an important piece of it. And these local ecosystems realize that, and some of the ones, are a little more receptive to seeing that deal flow from other areas of the country coming in, and it's great to see. So that's awesome to hear that the Northwest is starting to make a stake for that, because that's a big piece of what the med tech industry, biotech industry is missing, is those early stage angels that are willing to bet on some of these companies.
I think the move to recruit family offices, many of which are stem, come from that medical or dental background. I think that's going to really change how investing, especially angel investing, occurs.
Tell me about the, we've kind of covered investment, we've covered a little bit about the resources. Tell me about the academic institutions up there as well. They play a big role in a lot of this, right? Like in the Midwest, like in my region here in Ohio and Michigan and Minnesota and Iowa and Illinois and Indiana, there's a lot of really great biomedical engineering programs that spin out a lot of medical technology. When we talk about the roles of everything that make a great ecosystem, that's certainly one of them, right? There's a lot of grant dollars funneling there. So tell me about, we've covered Washington State. I don't know if I mentioned Washington on the call yet or not, but what are some of those other institutions that are kind of, spinning out some of these really good ideas and also really good entrepreneurs?
Well, we benefit from here in Spokane, we benefit from access to five different university systems. Both Washington State University and the University of Washington have campuses and activities here. Their medical schools start here. The University of Washington is partnered with Gonzaga University. Many people know Gonzaga University from
Got
their
it. Yep.
basketball team, but
Yeah.
they're
Yeah.
also well known for bioscience engineering. We have as well Eastern Washington University and Whitworth University. So these universities have worked together to kind of understand what their strengths and weaknesses are in the region and to kind of focus on those different spaces. So, for example, the Washington State University College of Medicine focuses on the community aspects, focuses on rural health and that partnership and how do they serve the entire state with physicians, with new physicians. They have a very interesting clinic for a native health practice. And that is the only one of its kind in the nation, and they get a lot of attention around that. Similarly, the University of Washington, they are the WWAMI, so that's Washington, Wyoming, Alaska, Montana, and Idaho partner for medical education. So that's the WWAMI School of Medicine, and the first 2 years of that occur here in Spokane as well. So they're producing doctors for this entire space as well. They're also well known for their research in both medicine as well as in other aspects of the biosciences. So we have a really dynamic, I think, university systems very focused on student education. I think where we see the challenges, and this is not alone to Washington State, I think we see this across the nation. Colleges and universities are waking up to the challenge that there will be fewer graduating students from high school next year than they were this year, and it will increasingly get smaller and smaller, that class size. So they need to serve, they need to attract to serve that population effectively. I'm always challenging my college and university partners to think differently about their value proposition for students. both that they want to make sure that those students have good opportunities, but they want to also engage with the industry to make sure that they're serving our local industry needs, as well as being able to say, well, what are the right areas where we can collaborate to grow our industry bigger. So that's what makes the academic piece a huge part of a modern innovation cluster. If we aren't building the talent of the future and reattracting them. So we know that our universities have been graduating young people in the biosciences for years, and many of them have had to go to other states in order to find good careers. And what the message that we're saying is, take a look at what's happening now. If you're ready, we're ready for you. There are jobs available now. And more importantly, there are great opportunities for you to come back, especially if you see yourself as an entrepreneur. So lots of good supports in for anything. And then we know their parents want them to come home too. So
yeah,
that's always a great message.
Right. That's right. I'll give one more fun fact. And I promise I know more about Washington than just football programs, but Eastern Washington University is known for their red turf field.
That's correct.
Well.
Reese Field.
Yeah. It just kind of jogged my memory as you brought that up. Okay. So we've covered the academic side, you know, the investment side, the resource side. You know, one other thing I've noticed too, and I'm glad you're doing the podcast to let people know about this, but there's a lot of these great areas across the country, across the world, right? That are there's interesting things going on and really cool innovation districts. And in your case, a cluster, you know, of people who are trying to foster these good ideas and help these startups get to where they need to be. One of the areas that just, I think, you know, a lot of times, and there's a number of reasons why, but where these groups fall short is just bragging about what they have and themselves, right? It's like getting them to talk about how awesome they are. And, you know, even just in conversations, we were at an Ohio Tech Summit last week, as we're recording this last week. You know, someone started out the conversation with like, well, yeah, I mean, we're not like some of the groups in Boston, but, and I'm like, well, hold on a second. Like, you don't know like how well they're doing. I mean, have you ever, you know, talked to them or maybe you are as good as them, right? It's like, this just perception that, oh, well, we're not that good, but we're getting there. And it's like, you might be as good. I don't know. Right. And so, do you see that a little bit too, as you're talking to people about, hey, you know, you should be proud about this, talk about this, like get your name out there. This is really exciting things on what you're doing.
You know, I think that awareness and promotion, there is a really nice fine line between really just being over the top bragging and the right amount of that humility. The way I like to think of it is, okay, if you see another organization as the model or as something you want to be, find one or two specific things about what they're doing that you think make them really good. And then, you know, go and find out about it. You know, like, as you point out, talk to them, find out how they did it. What I find is a lot of these organizations are more than willing to share. The smart folks always recognize that we have way more to gain by working together than we do by working at cross purposes. So I get great ideas from my fellow members of the Innovation Cluster Accelerator Program cohort. We have I'm one of nine organizations in that cohort, and we're the only bioscience organization. But that doesn't mean I can't learn from the folks who are working in, say, advanced nuclear engineering or aerospace or clean fuels. And in fact, a lot of the things that we're talking about are so similar, the challenges that we as cluster leaders and CEOs face are so similar that we have a regular meeting every couple of months to talk about the problems and try to figure out how we can help each other solve them.
Yeah, that's awesome. In closing on the evergreen piece, because I do want to talk a little about the quality piece and your work around startups and that sort of thing. For the evergreen piece, why if someone's listening to this podcast right now and looking for a home to foster an idea, why come to the Northwest?
Why come to the Northwest? Well, we have a lot of assets here that we can offer. If a company is looking to relocate and looking to find a space that is very valuable, I think particularly if you're still in that early pre-seed stage where you're looking for funding, here in Spokane County, we have an organization called the Health Sciences and Services Authority that has a matching grant program. So they will match up to $500,000 in SBIR, SDTR, or other types of grants for entrepreneurs who are developing their product, but that those entrepreneurs need to move their business to Spokane. You pointed out that this is an economic development. It's certainly aligned with an economic development frame. So we have economic development professionals here in the state that are more than happy to talk to folks about, you know, what does that look like? What does that relocation look like? The cluster itself works to connect people. There's a startup incubator here in Spokane that's affiliated with Washington State University, but it is business agnostic as well as serving the entire region, multi-state region. So, you know, connecting people together with the resources they need, with experts to help them figure out what, you know, how to solve their problems, trying to get them connected again to those funding sources and that early stage and pre-seed angel network that that they need to get to those next phases.
Yeah. Awesome. So you mentioned your quality expertise and your, I believe you said you had a consulting group as well.
That's correct. Absolutely.
What is the name of that group?
That name is Katrina Rogers Consulting. So
nice.
That makes it really easy.
Yeah, right. Right. On the quality side of things, I'm curious, you know, through your work around these different companies, large and small, what are some of the things that people get wrong when thinking about quality? The origin of this question, right, was I had the CEO of Greenlight Guru on the podcast, David Duram. And, you know, he was talking about the culture of Greenlight Guru. And for those who don't know, Greenlight Guru is a electronic quality management system for the mm-hmm. medtech space. And he had said, you know, the way we think about it is, when have you ever gone to a restaurant and said, boy, that food was compliant. You go to the restaurant, you say, wow, that was good quality food, right? And he said that and I laughed and he's like, that's how we think of medical devices, right? And you know, it kind of clicked for me of like, oh, I get it, right? It needs to be part of your culture as a startup organization, not just, oh, I got to check this box so I can get through the FDA or be compliant with ISO 13485 or whatever it is, but rather, you know, that should be like the benchmark and you should aim to exceed that, right? And so he got me thinking about that. Now I talk about it a lot more with our startup companies, but curious on your thoughts on quality and then also just, yeah, where do people fall short most often?
Most often. I do think that there's definitely something there that I see quite often. So quality has a couple of aspects. There is the compliance aspect. There's the requirements to meet a regulatory set of standards. And that set of standards, it changes. It's sometimes more quickly than most people would like, but sometimes much more slowly than they would like. But there is a baseline. And what I see people challenged with is they focus on that and where they miss on the compliance quality piece is thinking about an application as one and done. So the recognition that, oh, by the way, you're going to have to, that's a submission. It's a filing. It has a life of its own. You're going to have to maintain it. It's not just that, oh, it's a box we can check and then we'll never have to look at it again. So that's one mistake that a key mistake that people make when they're thinking about the compliance quality piece. But yeah. The other side of quality is really around what is what would delight the market? And when you think about the market in this case, it's not only the practitioners, the people who are going to be advising their patients about using the product. It's also the patients themselves, because, you know, we all know situations where you take a medicine and the side effects are worse than the actual condition it's intended to treat. The compliance really drops down because you're just not at all delighting people with the experience that they have of the product. Mm-hmm. I think similarly, you know, devices that are difficult to use. I think a lot of people struggled with the COVID antibody tests. I'm not sure how they could make them simpler, but nevertheless, there is, you know, there was clearly a non-delighting factor to them.
Yeah.
And then I think the other piece of it is thinking about what those delighting factors are in the context of the reimbursement strategy, which there's one of the challenges that device entrepreneurs that I see in entrepreneurs quite a bit is they focus on the regulatory, the compliance aspects. They don't spend a lot of time thinking about what that reimbursement strategy is, what are the delighters that will actually create the pull for their device to be used. And, mm-hmm. and that's fundamentally how their company is going to stay alive.
Yeah, that's a great point. Something we harp on a lot at Project MedTech with our companies, and even taking reimbursement and kind of pulling it apart even more and saying, mm-hmm. what is your economic story and what is your value to all the stakeholders across this process, right? Your mm-hmm. clinicians, clinicians and other people who will interact with your product, but mm-hmm. Patients, hospital systems, insurance or payers, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Really understanding all of that from the very early stages. We see a lot. We see that happen a lot. And regulatory, very specifically, we see people kind of focus on that because they look at that as like, oh, well, this is something I can accomplish, right? I can mm-hmm. get to FDA mm-hmm. clearance or approval. And so they focus on that, and that becomes their sole goal, rather than starting with, well, commercialization at the end and working their way back and kind of reverse engineering that. And so I'm glad you brought that up. Well, this has been fantastic. Katrina, I really appreciate your time. Is there anything else in closing that you wanted to touch on that we missed? Did we cover everything?
Well, I will tell you that here we are in our founding, really essentially our founding year of Evergreen Bioscience. And so we are actively seeking members and sponsors, people who are interested in not just investing in building the bioscience ecosystem of the future, but also participating, you know, in whatever form that they want. We have innovation teams that have formed. We're always looking for people who have a really good idea and want to pull together an innovation team that the cluster can help support. And as well as, and it's very easy for people to find out more. They can go right to our website, which is evergreenbioinnovation.com.
Awesome. That will be in the show notes, the link to that website, as well with Katrina's LinkedIn. So you'll have the website, you'll have the LinkedIn, and that'll all be in the show notes. So depending on the platform you're listening to, up or down an inch, and it'll be hyperlinked right there. Katrina, thank you so much for doing this. Hang on for 1 minute. We'll chat offline, but thanks for taking the time to chat with me today.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure, Dwayne.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you need anything from the podcast, you can always contact us at info@projectmedtech.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.